And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
Thank you for all the comments and questions that we've received. Several people commented on the budget show that we had, Organic on the Budget, and how much they liked the really hands-on practical tips that we gave during the show. The show we did with Green Tea and Honey, Amay Shani and Jennifer Brewer, part of the Green Morning here on Green 960, an entire morning dedicated to your health, holistic nutrition, smart green travel, food activism, and how to live a less toxic life. Every Saturday from 9 to 12:30, the Green Morning here on Green 960. One of the comments we received for Organic on a Budget was from Julie from Santa Fe, New Mexico, who writes us, "Fantastic show every week. Thank you so much for raising awareness and making it fun to listen to. I love the show about Organic on a Budget and couldn't agree more. Eating organically does absolutely not have to be more expensive. I cook a certain base food for a few days out, which I then use for all my meals, sweets or savory. When I cook rice, for example, I use the rice to make desserts, add vegetables for a wholesome meal, or add bananas for a great breakfast. Having a pre-cooked base staple food ready-made is the basis of all my meals, and it saves me time and money every week. Julie from Santa Fe, New Mexico, thank you. That's such a great idea. Rice for breakfast. Maybe with some maple syrup. Organic rice is now, I think, 99 cents a pound, Mark.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And it's healthy and delicious. And you just wrote a blog on bananas as well.
I just wrote a blog on bananas, so it's perfect timing. I just did a class on tropicals about a week ago for a whole group of people down at Santa Cruz. And so we were talking about what to look for. And then, of course, I put that banana walnut pancake recipe in my blog this time.
And fun to think of rice not as a savory food with some meat or whatever, your vegetables, but that you can actually make a breakfast out of it. I don't think many people eat rice for breakfast.
Well, you can take fried plantains, you can take all kinds of different things. And actually, it's not that uncommon. It just depends on, that we all come from different cultures,
that's right.
All of our different cultures. And having rice for breakfast is not that uncommon in many cultures. So, and adding fruit to it. I know that seems odd here in America, but it's very common elsewhere.
Rice and fruit?
Yeah.
India?
Yeah, or the Caribbean. You do some plantains, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Rice and mango and rice too, yeah.
Again, thank you, Julie from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Great comment. If you have a comment or question, please email us at share@anorganicconversation.com. And Mark, where can people find your blog?
They can find it at For the Love of Produce. Is on blogger.com.
Or, of course, An Organic Conversation, Mark and my information and blogs all
That'd
there.
Be even easier.
Yeah.
Just to go to our website, yeah.
I'm excited about our guest today as we are talking about teaching sustainable agriculture here, domestically, and abroad around the world. More about that in a minute when we come back. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We'll be right back after the break. And we're back here to An Organic Conversation on Green 960. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today is Leah Atwood, Program Manager, and Lauren Augusta, the Executive Director of MESA, the Multinational Exchange for Sustainable Agriculture, an organization promoting sustainable farming alternatives throughout the world. Thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
We're excited to be here.
How are you guys? Is this a busy time of year?
It is. Yeah, the program actually just started the last week of March. We brought all of the international agrarian stewards, or trainees, we call them, to here to California at Los Altos. It's Hidden Villa Farm and Wilderness Center for for their four-day orientation before they depart to all of their training locations all over the U.S.
So, Lauren, you started MESA in 1994.
I did.
Tell us what's your goal? What is MESA and what are you trying to achieve?
Well, I had spent the first part of my postgraduate career working for an international exchange program that was promoting conventional agriculture. And the reason I was interested in that to begin with was because I had been a major in, I had majored in Russian in college and was just really interested in cultural exchanges.
Russian literature, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Language and literature. And so it was the cultural exchange aspect that I was most interested in when I started work for this one upstart nonprofit. And the agricultural aspect was something that wasn't that familiar to me. But after many years of working for that organization, I really realized how, you know, how amazing it was to be using agriculture as a vehicle for all these other great things that happen, and you know, in a cultural exchange, and yet I was frustrated because there were aspects of that organization that I just didn't feel were meeting the needs of the foreign participants who were coming, and felt like...
So you back then had international guests, they were coming to conventional farms.
They were coming to a conventional farm, spending up to a year living and training at those farms and then going back to their home countries and by and large never to be heard from again. And as far as at least that organization was doing, we weren't doing a lot of follow-up on what became of people once they went back to their countries. And
what were you teaching them then? Like what?
Really, it was, you know, it was to promote American agriculture.
Large scale.
We did work with some, you know, a fair number of family farms as well. And the emphasis was, of course, on the cross-cultural exchange as well as the agricultural technology sort of interest that people profess to have when they came. But I started to meet some organic farmers just on my own and sort of felt really, you know, something that I hadn't felt in my other program, which was just a real synergy with the people I was meeting. And, you know, that they, by and large, of course, this is a generalization, had been more progressive ideas about just social justice issues, of course, environmental consciousness. And many of those organic growers had also traveled to other parts of the world, so had a real interest in meeting and working and sharing with international farmers. So that kind of gave me the little seed of an idea to start MESA.
And that was 16 years ago. Lauren Augusta, the executive director of MESA, the Multinational Exchange for Sustainable Agriculture, guest on an organic conversation today here on Green 960. Leah, you're the program manager. What do you oversee? Like what does Lauren not do that you do?
Well, we're small, so we wear a lot of shared hats on
and
our
they,
team.
And they look good on you, too.
Yeah.
Thank you. but I'm, so throughout the program year, it's a seasonal program that starts in March and it goes all the way through November. So it's eight months, and we have an extension part that lasts for the remaining four. But I'm doing everything from really developing and working with our international global partners, which we have, let's see, five this year. And,
what are global partners?
So our global partners are mostly NGOs and universities in predominantly developing countries. And so we work with them throughout the whole year, but to recruit are the trainees, or we call them stewards. And then they also are a big component of the support throughout the program, and then also helping them access resources and work on their home country projects, which we do funding for when they go back home after they complete the project.
So NGOs, non-governmental organizations, mm-hmm. basically you have nonprofits in different countries mm-hmm. that you have partnered up with.
Exactly.
Where every year they send a certain group of students,
yeah.
of people who want to learn about sustainable agriculture.
Yeah.
What countries are you working with?
So this year it is Peru and Ecuador. Those are our biggest mm-hmm. programs. And then we also have a smaller program with Thailand and Ghana.
And what what defines that? Like, why now Peru and Ecuador? Just based on the interest or?
It is. Well, so establishing the global partner relationship takes a lot of time. There has to be a certain amount of trust that goes in. And so that takes years to cultivate.
Sure. Yeah.
So right now, the Ecuador and the Peru program are about 5 years old. And we also have funding that's come from the USDA to help with those programs and cover some of their English training before they get here, their international travel, and also their project support, their home country projects when they go home. So that's the reason why they're our biggest programs.
And I know that organic is now, you know, we have our federal law and we have Catherine Merrigan and she's in charge of it. She's the director of the program. And so what I'm wondering is...
Actually, deputy director.
Thank you. thank you, Helga. It makes a big difference there. But I'm wondering, why is the USDA want to promote, you know, Ecuadorian, you know, this exchange between us and them and Peru specifically? I mean, that's where you're working now.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But why does the federal government care?
Oh, I can... perhaps shed Lauren, a little light.
Absolutely.
Well, Mesa is actually designated a program through the State Department. And back in 1961, my birth year, at the same time that the Peace Corps was being established, mm-hmm. there's something called the Mutual Educational and Cultural Exchange Act, which was... marshaled in by then Senator Fulbright. It's also called the Fulbright-Hayes Act. And part of its purpose was to increase mutual understanding between the people of the United States and the people of other countries by means of educational and cultural exchange. So it's kind of this little niche within the State Department that not a whole lot of people know about, but they're actually a plethora of exchange programs that are running in all different sectors of business and, you know, between all different countries of the world and the U.S. And so...
Did that act from 1961 define the goal of that?
It did. It defined the goal, and it's something that we really feel passionate about. you know, not just that... Not from this presumption that, like, Americans have all the information and people should want to come here and, you know, mimic what we're doing here, but to really have a mutual exchange
of
cultures.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. And so that helps explain that whole beginning. But is there a particular reason why this year it's Ecuador or last 5 years it's been Ecuador and Peru? Or is there other countries that it just happens to be the time when you're working with these countries?
Are you directed by the government in that sense? No.
No. I have to say, in some ways, the countries that we now work with, it's been a lot of trial and error. We've worked with about 25 different countries over the past 15 years since our first program mm-hmm. actually started. As Leah said, it just takes a lot of time and effort to develop those relationships. And, you know, part of what those relationships have, rely on is then our partners, our in-country partners having certain connections and credibility in their own communities. And so...
To get their local government
To get their mm-hmm. local government support. So, for example, with our partners in Peru... they had a very good reputation. They're actually part of the university system in Lima, but it's a little organic educational
experimental
experimental farm for the students. at the Agricultural University, and the two professors who were most involved with that program just have a stellar reputation throughout Latin America. And they have extensive networks, you know, with other NGOs, and were really interested in MESA. We were actually introduced to them by a professor here at Berkeley, Miguel Altieri. And so they just have done an amazing job of recruiting people for our program who really just have their heart and soul invested in organic agriculture.
You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today, Lauren Augusta, the executive director, and Leah Atwood, the program manager of MESA, the Multinational Exchange for Sustainable Agriculture, an organization promoting sustainable farming alternatives throughout the world. So when you have a relationship established with a country or with an NGO, with a nonprofit in, let's say, Peru, and it's kind of sanctioned by the government, supported, do you go through all the processes of getting the visa for them? How large are the groups of farmers? Are those farmers, or are those people who are not yet farmers who want to learn what we do here in organic agriculture? What's the...
It's split, and actually it depends on each country. In Peru, which is our largest program this year, we had 15 stewards come, and they actually like to focus on really working with the rural farmers who are farming for their livelihoods, and a lesser extent on the students who have, you know, are one or two or three generations removed from the land, but have reconnected through their universities, so they have more academic backgrounds. So yeah, the majority in Peru are coming from family farms. Yeah.
And what's the age range?
It tends to be in 20 to 35, around there. Yeah.
And they really come to learn here what they can. How much is it really applicable that you have found? Like, you know, organic agriculture is so site specific. If you really work with nature,
it is.
What you can learn at a farm, you know, let's say in Marin County, might not work in the jungle of Honduras.
Exactly.
Or,
yeah.
You know,
so it's
in
a
the
really
highlands of Peru.
It's a really important consideration. So we try, when we're doing the matchmaking process.
Oh, great. You're really working.
Yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
We're getting into dating. Actually, let's talk about that when we come back after the break. This is a great point. You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back after the break.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet League Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica Skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
For the ultimate West Marin experience, visit Toby's Feed Barn in Point Reyes Station, home of the Point Reyes Farmers Market every Saturday. Toby's Feed Barn features organic produce, native plants, gifts, books, an organic coffee bar, an art gallery, concerts, even daily yoga classes. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station, open 7 days a week, family-owned and operated since 1942, a West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Marin Organic, an association of organic food producers in Marin County, California, is helping to create a healthy and sustainable food shed just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. A model for how to feed a region in a way that is economically viable, environmentally sound, socially just, and culturally appropriate. The opportunity to change the world is right on our place. Be a part of the solution. For more information on Marin Organic and how to support its efforts, visit marinorganic.org.
And we're back here to an organic conversation on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today is Lauren Augusta and Leah Atwood, Executive Director and Program Manager of MESA, the Multinational Exchange for Sustainable Agriculture, an organization promoting sustainable farming alternatives throughout the world. And before the break, Leah, you were saying once you establish good relationships with other countries and nonprofit organizations and then select groups of farmers or people interested in sustainable agriculture that want to come to the U.S. to be part of your program, you actually have a matching process.
Yeah.
Where you look, how do you profile the people enough to know everything about them to really put them into the perfect situation here in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's challenging because ultimately you can do as much paperwork and interviews and really it takes meeting someone to really get to
it
know.
Does.
But
it's
we do
a leap of faith in a lot of ways for our hosts, for our U.S. hosts here to, you know, take that leap of faith based on what someone has written on their, you know, very extensive, albeit very extensive MESA application to actually meeting that person and you know, having already pre-made a commitment to live and work with them for 8 months.
Yeah, I just saw that every eighth marriage is got together through online dating. So obviously, you don't have to necessarily know somebody in person before in order to make a fair judgment call. But so you have...
But these guys aren't allowed to date before they start working together.
No, I got that, Mark. Thank you. No. But so you know the gender, you know the age, you know the general interest, you know where they're coming from, what their living situation is, and what they're looking for. And then how do you select farms here? Like what is your criteria to become a partner and how do you make that match?
Yeah, well, we have an application for both the steward side and our host partner side. And what we look for are hosts that are really committed to the idea of mentorship and of teaching and educating and the learn and share component to perpetuate their own practices and their ecological focuses. A lot of our new host partners come from word of mouth, our hosts saying, mm-hmm. We have this, we're using this program and it's worked well for us and recommending. And also from our stewards who are attending farmers markets and working at, you know, with CSA members and connecting to various, to other growers in that way.
So how do you check that a farm is qualified, like that they can apply or teach the knowledge you want them to teach? Do they have to go through a certain...
They do. They do. So we have, it's a two-part application. They have a series of questions that they fill out and then they go through what their proposed training plan would be for their incoming agrarian steward. So a seasonal chronology of what activities and what roles the steward would play on their farm.
And then we also have reference checks.
Mm-hmm.
So we really like to talk to the former or current employees and interns of that farm.
And the neighbor.
Mm-hmm. And the neighbor, sure.
And they have to have
farmer's
a certain,
market manager or whoever that might
track
be.
Track record of having been at Long Farm and have the expertise and maybe spoken publicly. Yes, Mark.
Yeah, I was wondering, so how many hosts do you have here in the United States? And does it go beyond California?
Yeah. We're a pretty small program, but we do have host farms throughout the U.S. We have currently about 25 hosts participating, and that is from Maui to Massachusetts.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then so when this group from Peru, for example, will come to the U.S. this year, or they just arrived,
they just arrived.
Right? Yep. How many are part of this?
15 from Peru, 11 from Ecuador, 4 from Thailand, and one sole Ghanaian who got his visa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Left behind 4 who were rejected for their visas, but this is a new program for us, starting this
with
program
Ghana.
With Ghana. So it's always a bit of a unknown when we start a new program in a developing country, whether people will actually get through that visa process, which is quite daunting. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And do you keep that group now that has just arrived in one geographical area for practical purposes, or are they really spread out?
They're
the U.S.
really quite spread out. I would say we definitely have developed sort of pockets of host communities. We have a number of hosts on the East Coast right now. We have a few in Minnesota. We have a number of hosts in California. And it really is, as Leah said, a lot of times it's through word of mouth. It's through, you know, the neighboring farm meeting a Mesa steward and saying, hey, you know, I'd love to do this too. Mm.
And then how long will they stay here now?
It's a 7.5 month program, and then we have a 4 month extension option for stewards who feel like, oh, you know, I've completed this amount of my learning objectives, but I'd really like now to focus on this. And we can either extend their program at their current host, or we look for a new placement for them, depending on what those
are. So the entire growing season, from planting to the summer crop coming in, harvest,
yeah,
whatever.
Ideally,
it may be,
for most farms, obviously, that's not necessarily in sync for, say, livestock farmers, or, you know, we're.
But with pastures fading
for the
in
most
summer,
part,
like they still, you know, once the rain stops, they, at least here for California, they do get the cycle of the season. For a fair degree, most of it, most of the year. And do you get them together during that time a couple more times, or they come here and then they at the end gather and then they leave? Is it too expensive to?
It is quite expensive.
I mean, the travel,
yeah,
in the
because
middle.
Mesa does provide for the domestic travel for all of our participants to get to their host assignments. And then return from their host assignments for an exit seminar in San Francisco. We're not able to, you know, get them all together as a group during their training, which is, again, why we do like to have kind of these clusters of hosts, because then they, you know, in their own regions do get together with one another and visit each other's farms and that sort of thing.
And many of them attend, like, various conferences, ecological farming conferences, and so we do fundraising to help them be able to do that and pay for their entry and travel. And so a lot of them end up reconvening at those kind of venues as well.
And they're staying in touch with each other.
Oh, definitely.
They know where each other.
We have like chats on our website,
chat rooms with all of our stewards.
The Mesa Facebook page.
We do. It's recent, relatively, but yes.
That brings up, can you give our listeners some idea of, like, some of the stories maybe that you could share with us about, give us a little bit of the color of what you get to feel really good about every day from your great work that you're doing.
I mean, really, like, just to take that in, I think that's a beautiful question mark, because we're talking Ghana and we're talking Peru. Some of these people have never left
traveled
their region,
yeah,
right, or their
never
country
gotten on
at
a
least.
Plane.
Never gotten on a plane,
exactly.
Yeah.
How do you integrate them culturally?
One thing is mixing up, you know, if we have a host farm that is interested in hosting, say, 2 stewards in our program, we will always recommend that they host 2 people from different countries, and if at all possible, 2 stewards who speak different languages. So there's a lot of, you know, because it's not only, again, it's not just about coming to the U.S. and learning stuff that Americans may have to share, but also meeting other cultures as well.
Absolutely.
And a lot of, you know, great bonding happens at our orientation, and relationships form with just the exchange, you know, the stewards from different countries who have gone on to have lasting friendships and even some romances.
Yeah, we have amazing marriage stories.
Mesa dating.
You did say you were matchmaker, yes.
Share a story of what if somebody maybe wanted to go back right away or didn't want to leave, or it's like I'm just picturing some of us going into the desert in Ghana and being without water and electricity for 3 weeks. It's it's a beautiful experience, but it's also very unusual and tough.
Yeah.
If anyone has ever done that, it's yeah, life-changing.
Mesa stewards are incredibly brave.
They are. And they really have to be so dedicated and devoted to going back and contributing and sharing with their own communities to be able to come here, leave their jobs
families,
for the first time, and take this leap of faith.
And so what's some of the feedback you've gotten?
It's one of the challenges, really, too, is being able to really garner these stories, because a lot of our stewards are coming from places where there's not easy internet access. And so it's hard for us to collect those updates and really get a hold on what they're doing after they go back. But it's also it's paramount to the program to be able to explain and to show what's happening and how these relationships are long lasting. And last year in May, Lauren and I went down to Peru, and then I continued on to Ecuador and Colombia to visit the projects and see what's going on, 1 year, 2 year, 5 years down the road after the stewards come and have their U.S. exchange.
And when Leah mentions projects, we do fundraise specifically for stewards to start small scale community projects when they go back, so that they are, in fact, implementing techniques and things that they've learned in the program, and that's something we're incredibly proud of, and it's taken on a life of its own.
And the projects, everything from starting CSAs to farm to school programs, farm to hospital, farm to restaurant. The marketing, the innovations that they encounter here are a huge incentive for stewards to join the program.
So in addition to cultural exchange and, of course, knowledge transfer in both ways, you're actually building community leaders, right? It's not necessarily designed for going back to their farm and, doing a good job on their farm, but really to take a greater role in their community to help the overall community.
It's really across the board. We have stewards that they're content. They want to stay with their families, with their farms. They're not looking to get involved in government or, bigger adventures. But we also have
Stewards who plan to be the next minister. Minister of Agriculture in the Republic of Georgia.
And we have stewards that are working with NGOs and doing doing extension work, doing certification work. So it's really across the board.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today is Lauren Augusta, the Executive Director, and Leah Atwood, the Program Manager of MESA, the Multinational Exchange for Sustainable Agriculture. Fantastic work, an organization promoting sustainable farming alternatives throughout the world by bringing foreign cultures here to the U.S. for a 7 month internship or apprenticeship on organic farms. And we have something similar, but not quite, on the phone now. Tony Serrano, the general manager of ALBA, the Agriculture and Land-Based Training Association, a nonprofit organization in Salinas, California, focused on teaching minorities, primarily Latino and Latina, how to farm organically and sustainably. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi, Helga.
Yeah, hi. Our paths cross again.
Incredibly. I was excited to hear that I'd be talking to you.
Great, thank you. Tony, tell us, what is ALBA? What's your goal with that organization down in Salinas, and how did it get started?
Well, I think you kind of summed it up in your intro there, but it is about that. We're trying to teach primarily minorities, and that being Latinos, how to be viable and to be successful farmers and marketers through our Ag Course program. So this is something that dates back to 1972, where it all kind of started, back when President Johnson was campaigning to get rid of poverty, or improve that, if you will. So basically, the farm was sold back then. The owners were Judge James Barton, and his wife is the one who actually sold it to a federally sponsored organization then called Central Coast County Cooperative Development Center. And that went on. Their idea then was to form cooperatives to give Latino growers a competitive edge, or collectively be able to compete in the marketplace. And that, of course, hasn't been a very good model, so it failed in 1985. And then from there it became, the stewardship of the farm was taken over by another association, but this time it was being run from Washington, D.C., and the name of that association was Association for Community-Based Education, or ACBE, and that went on until 1985.
And so you're really you're pulling, basically you're giving the predominant Latino farm worker the opportunity to ultimately have their own operation, right?
Correct. That is the prime goal here, mostly because Latinos are typically in this region are the farm labor force. And so though they're very involved in agriculture daily, they don't really have the opportunity to or capacity to go out and get a loan and get the capital it takes to form their own business and start their own operation. And though they know how to do probably every spectrum of ag as far as the hands-on, they lack the financial knowledge that is needed, and only because they don't have access to the information or the training. So that's what we do. We step in and provide that, make that information available to them, and or connect them to people who can help them, while we train them on all aspects of it. Really, they get an ag crash course, learning from seed selection to marketing and transport, post-harvest, you name it. It's all included in a six-month course. So it's pretty intense.
And so, Tony, you're saying that's a crash course, which everybody knows that this takes a lifetime to learn when you're learning how to farm, you know, and you're learning to just learn something completely different than maybe what the people have been familiar with before, you know, just even working in the marketplace or good post-harvest handling. And so when you say it's a crash course, how in depth do you get? You're not only teaching them, you said, from seed selection, but does that also mean that you're teaching them organics, the organics, how to farm with the organic standards, and then teaching them how to market? Because I find most farmers who learn or are coming into programs, they learn how to farm, they want to grow something, but they know very little about selling in the marketplace, and that does tend to hurt them when they come into the marketplace.
Yeah, that's right. We don't get very too deep into each aspect of the course there. As you said, agriculture takes a lifetime, if not more, to learn how to do everything. But what we do is we touch on the basics of every single thing. And the beauty of our program is that once they go through that course, that six-month Hartnell College-accredited course, then they graduate into a half acre. And now what I mean by graduate into a half acre is that they're allowed to farm up to a half acre on our farm here at a subsidized price. And in that, we help, there's technical support with what types of crops they should grow, and that's based on typically what our experience of selling into the marketplace is, And that's where the marketing comes into play, because Alba Organics, which is Alba's licensed wholesale distributor, does is it promotes our graduates and established farmers products, and so it kind of stabilizes the marketing part of it for them initially. So we do encourage them to start doing their own marketing, we also provide the information on what's going on a day-to-day basis.
So after the 6 months so-called crash course, they basically, when you say graduate into half an acre, they can get their feet wet by really experiencing what it takes to be a real farmer, even right. though they can still fall onto your marketing assistance. They're right. basically, in a way, on their own, learning it, eventually going from there to their own farm if land becomes available. Is right. that the idea?
So basically, we shepherd them throughout the whole process. The incubation process is 7 years. So even though initially it's just 6 months of theory, we are with them for the next 7 years, and even after that, we have some growers that were here even before Alba, when it was the ACBE. And still sell through us time to time when they need that extra push or they need that relief valve. So there's assistance throughout. Our staff is very experienced in different aspects of the process. And so we're there for them basically 24/7, and we do get calls late at night.
Incredible work, Tony Serrano. Tony, stay on the phone, please. Sure. We'll take a quick break. Tony Serrano, the general manager of ALBA, the Agriculture and Land-Based Training Association, a nonprofit in Salinas, California, focused on teaching minorities, primarily Latino and Latina, how to farm organically and sustainably through a half-year and then seven-year program. To make them farmers on their own farm eventually. You're listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are talking about teaching sustainable agriculture here domestically and abroad around the world. We'll be right back after the break.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Lee Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica Skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you looking for a romantic and unusual location in the Bay Area for your wedding or upcoming anniversary? Toby's Feed Barn offers the perfect venue for your celebration. A rustic barn in the heart of beautiful West Marin, with local organic caterers ready to delight your guests amid bales of hay. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station. Open 7 days a week. Family owned and operated since 1942. A West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today is Lauren Augusta, the executive director, and Leah Atwood, the program manager of MESA, the Multinational Exchange for Sustainable Agriculture, an organization promoting sustainable farming alternatives throughout the world by hosting international guests here in the U.S. And on the phone with us still is Tony Serrano, the general manager of ALBA, the Agriculture and Land-Based Training Association, a nonprofit in Salinas, California, focused on teaching minorities, primarily Latino and Latina, how to farm organically and sustainably, eventually to have them manage their own farm. Tony, you were saying 6 months program where they learn the ropes of organic agriculture, marketing, general bookkeeping, everything you kind of need to know in order to start your own farm. But after that, they're not thrown into the cold water. They can start on a half-acre plot that you give them with your support still, but basically on their own to learn what it takes to be a farmer out there in the real world.
Yes, that's true. But that's for the first 6 months after they graduate. So basically the course starts in January, goes through about June, and then from June until December, they get that half acre. They basically, it's the trial period. They get to play around with that half acre. Most of it gets marketed through ALBA Organics. But then from there, those who want to stay around or want to continue doing this, then they can graduate into more acreage. And throughout that incubation process, they can grow up to as much as 5 acres each.
Over 7 years, you said, right?
Over 7 years, right.
How large are the groups that you have? How many students do you accept every year?
Well, generally, we like to have no more than 30 students per year or per semester. This year, we started off with 32. Of those 32, we have 24 that are still doing it and more than likely will graduate. And of that, we had a 12-person waiting on a waiting list, but we had about 100 applicants this year.
Wow.
So the demand is there. There's a lot. In fact, we're exploring whether we should expand our program or do something else. But so we'll end up with about, say, 20 students.
Okay.
And of those 20, we really end up with 10. We select for 10 more dedicated growers. And of those 10, there's maybe a handful that actually stay after that.
And so, hey, Tony, so what type of products would your would our listeners find in the marketplace under the ALBA label?
Well, it would be greens, you know, chards, lacinato kales, collard greens, cauliflowers, beets, strawberries, raspberries, really an abundance of products, carrots, also potatoes. You know, just anything that can be grown around here, and now we've just added blueberries to that mix.
Oh wow, we're eating strawberries right now in
right.
the studio.
And actually, we had a show on labor practices with Jim Cochran, Equal Exchange, and his strawberry Swantonberry Farm.
Right.
As you know, who's part of the farm worker union,
right.
his operation in Devonport, and we ate his Chandlers 2 weeks
right.
ago. What are we eating today? What are these? I don't think these are Chandlers, right?
Those are Albion variety.
Mm-hmm. Albion.
Mm-hmm. Albion, yes. And they're actually coming from a fourth-year graduate, Rigoberto Bucio, here on our farm. And Chandler is an older variety, in my opinion, one of the two best strawberries that have ever existed.
I.
Yeah.
Right. I grew up in strawberries, you know, at my parents' farm for since I can remember. And so of my favorites, and I've tasted many, it's been Chandler, and there's another variety that was called Pajaro.
Well, these ones here in the studio, what are they called again?
Albion.
Yeah,
Albion, England.
Incredible. So please say hello to your grower and
I will.
Tell him excellent job, really amazing strawberries right here. Where can people support you? How can we find your products here in the Bay Area? What markets are you in?
Well, first of all, we channel through three major wholesale distributors up there, one being Earl's Organics.
Yes.
primarily veritable vegetable. We sell a lot through them. And also Greenleaf Produce.
All the leaders.
Right. And some of the stuff that gets through Veritable goes to Rainbow Grocery Store in, I believe, downtown San Francisco.
And people can see your label, right? It says
exactly.
Alba.
And then Buy Right in San Francisco. And in the East Bay, it'd be Berkeley Natural Grocery Store and El Cerrito Store in El Cerrito.
Yeah, fantastic. All the stores we love.
Mm-hmm. Right, to name a few. And also the New Leaf Markets. We sell to them from Half Moon Bay down to Capitola and out to Boulder Creek. So throughout that corridor, you'd be able to find our fruit and products in these stores, well as others in the Bay Area.
And it's a national show with a strong Bay Area focus. If you are not in California or here in the wider Bay Area, look for those stories because there's always a story behind each strawberry. Yes, Mark.
And I know that Veritable Vegetable distributes outside the state. So like Julie from New Mexico who wrote the letter, and she might be finding those at like La Montanita if she happened to live in Albuquerque and places like that because Veritable ships out of the state.
Wonderful. And we had Earl Herrick from Earl's Organic on the show, and we will have him again, a produce expert who has been focused with his business on only organic produce since 1988. I think he has his outlets and his partners on his website, earlsorganic.com. Tony, what can you share one success story of what you have witnessed since you've been with Alba? What have people who have graduated done with their knowledge and with their lives?
I think the one of the more prominent ones would be Maria Ines Catalan. I believe the name of her operation before Catalan Farms was Laughing Onion, and she's got a maybe 600 member CSA program, as well as multiple farmers markets, as well as wholesale and retail. She's just opening up a brand new farm, another 18 acres. And has integrated cherries to her program. So she's really branched out, has her own farmers, is training them and supporting them as well. One of them, in fact, just got his own organic certificate. So she's training them, and then they're going off on their own as well as augmenting her personal program. And she's a Latina, and she's a front person on this, she's at the head of her operation. Mm. So I would say she's one of the in my mind, one of the more successful stories there.
Thank you. Thank you for what you do, Tony Serrano, the general manager of ALBA, an organization primarily focused on teaching minorities, Latino and Latina, on how to farm organically from just being the farm worker to maybe having their own operation, just like Marines Catalan. Thank you, Tony, for being on the show today. Pleasure. And keep up the fantastic work.
Thank you, Helga, and thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you, Tony.
Leah Atwood, Program Manager, and Lauren Augusta, the Executive Director of Mesa, still in the studio here with us. Lauren, what are some of the success stories that you have found in your work of bringing people from other cultures into the U.S.? Some feedback that you've gotten. What have they done in their home countries or towns going back?
Oh gosh, there are amazing stories that I'm going to hand over to Leah. But just before we do, I just wanted to mention that ALBA has been a longtime host in the Mesa program, and it is such a fantastic model for our international stewards to come and actually get the opportunity to become teachers of organic production, working with marginalized farm workers. And it's been a great partnership that we've had with ALBA for many years. Our Mesa stewards often become, you know, integral
in the ALBA
key
operation.
Staff members of ALBA. Unfortunately, that can only last for a year because of the restrictions of their visa categories. But they then have gone on to, you know, try to replicate that same kind of system in their own communities.
Yeah, and Mark?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I just wanted to follow up with Lauren was said on the every package of an ALBA strawberry, like if you get it in a clamshell or something, what it says is where values are grown in. Mm. That's their tagline. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of fits perfectly exactly with what you were saying is in your partnership is that they really are teaching the values just along the same with your work. I love the tagline. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah. And the ALBA stewards they always go on to be really prominent educators in their communities because they're involved in, I think it's ALBA's PEPA program, where they're in the classroom and they're in the fields. So, but yeah, going back to when you had asked about the success stories and when Lauren and I went down to Peru, being able to see the projects and touch the earth and see their gardens and see the fields.
After they came here.
After their U.S. training program.
Incredible.
And then working to get their home country projects on the ground started and collaborating with our partners to keep that momentum going. It was an amazing trip and so inspiring. And we had actually a summit where we had stewards from the past years coming together to convene at La Molina University, which is the agriculture university in Lima. And so you have, because the stewards don't meet each other from year to year, this was an opportunity for them to connect and network and talk about the projects they had going on. And it was so amazing to see their excitement grow and being able to collaborate and plan for the future.
And I'm sure it goes both ways,
it
right?
It does.
U.S. hosting agencies or farms being as inspired by that exchange.
Yeah, it's always a sign of a great host for us when a host tells us that they feel that they learned as much from their steward as they possibly felt they had to teach.
Yeah, beautiful. That's the idea. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you so much to our guests today, Lauren Augusta, the Executive Director, and Leah Atwood, Program Manager of MESA, the Multinational Exchange for Sustainable Agriculture, an organization promoting sustainable farming alternatives throughout the world. More information at mesaprogram.org. And on the phone with us today was Tony Serrano, General Manager of ALBA, the Agriculture and Land-Based Training Association, a nonprofit organization in Salinas, California, focused on teaching minorities, primarily Latino and Latina, how to farm organically and sustainably. More information on ALBA at albafarmers.org. Thank you again for coming to the studio and being on the show today.
An Organic Conversation was produced by Robert Costa, production assistant, the outstanding Gina Rastani. Underwriting production is provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all, and always thanks to the team here at Green 960, our own very own Fab Four, Corey Cowart, Mark Magnone, Chris Gardiner, and Ricky Falaire. Also, thank you to our listeners for being part of the show and for actually listening.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com. You can also find us now on iTunes, where you can download An Organic Conversation to your iPhone or iPod to take us with you on the road.
You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Both look for An Organic Conversation. And we'd love to hear from you, so please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
Coming up here, right after the hour, is Your Supernatural Life with Beth Greer, a fantastic show on how to live a healthier, less Toxic Life, all part of The Green Morning, an entire morning dedicated to your health, holistic nutrition, eco-travel, and to untoxify your household and your life. So please stay tuned for Beth Greer, Your Supernatural Life. Right after the hour, we are your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
We'll be back next Saturday at 10 a.m. Have a great weekend, and thanks again for listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. Mission music was ringing around my nursery door.